opportunity. Seize everything you ever wanted. One moment that you capture, just let it slip. Yo. His palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy. There's vomit on his sweater already. Mom's spaghetti, he's nervous, but on the surface he looks calm and ready to drop bombs. But he keeps
on the ice. Radio continues on Sports Radio 105. The Ticket. Good Saturday morning to you. I was thinking for a minute when that game was tied at three that Minnesota was going to pull the clean sweep last night against Chicago. That would have been the 1-0 Twins win over the surging Minnesota Twins win. Now 11-12 on the season, in third place in the Central Division. But hold the phone. In an hour, Gene Larkin and Al Newman will be joining us to talk baseball with On Deck Radio. For now, we talk hockey. The Minnesota Wild, Chicago Blackhawks playoff series continues. One bit of note before we are joined by our guest, Rob Tichkowski. He, of course, from the Edmonton Sun-Times. He's covering the game as well in Chicago. Devin Dubnyk is another awards being bestowed upon him, or at least as a finalist. Now he's a Masterton Memorial Trophy finalist. He's in the hunt along with Andrew Hammond of the Ottawa Senators. And, Chris, I don't think I'm going to lose this one, Letang of the Pittsburgh Penguins. But once again, for Devin Dubnyk, you got to tip the cap. And let's first of all, Chad, would you agree that Chris Letang is pretty much the story of getting that done, as far as, wow, the guy had a stroke, he got through it, and had a heck of a year? I mean, that to me is – I mean, mental perseverance is one thing, but physical and mental is another.
It's there are a lot of candidates this year, and it it reminds you the only guy who's won the Masterton from the Wild is Josh Harding. The season that he put up his outstanding numbers through, call it, late December, before having to step away for some time with MS.
Rob Tichkowski from the Edmonton Sun. Good morning from the Windy City. You're hanging, covering this series for the Sun. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, my second series. I had Chicago National in the first round, so this is quickly becoming my second home here.
You're a Midwest bureau of the Edmonton Sun. Look out in Chicago.
Yeah.
So from your perspective on that Masterton Trophy, would you agree that, I mean, if you went through the things that Chris Letang went through just to get himself back on the ice, that's a pretty incredible story.
It really is. Like, the Masterton is kind of like, there's always two schools of thought. It seems to be like almost an illness award where somebody, yeah, you know, recovers from something, and they seem to be the guys who normally get it. But I think a nod or a recognition should also be given to just the journeyman guys who have been with the game for a long time and battled through just trying to become an elite player or just a player in the league. And you're right, Dubnyk is going to have a hard time winning it just because, you know, frankly, he didn't go through the ailments that Chris Letang did. But his journey to where he is right now is impressive in its own right, absolutely.
Just to be finalists in all of these categories, and you know he's going to be up in the heart somewhere, maybe top five, a guy that you've seen a lot in Edmonton play, and, you know, I mean, obviously he was a first-round pick. And we went over this a little bit with Derek Van Dieste as well. But, I mean, I think it bodes the quick discussion point on what he's done this year based off what you saw from him in Edmonton. And keeping in mind, there's been a lot of chaos structurally on the ice and in management up during his years. But still, the fact is, he wasn't stealing many games, I don't think, in his earlier career. Or was he?
No, he had Seattle stretches where he was pretty good. But I think playing behind a really bad team for a long time, I think it just wears on you. And then I was talking to him yesterday in the room, and he said, you know, when you're playing on a good team, a team that plays sound, structured defense, you only have to worry about what you're supposed to worry about, like the shooter and maybe the guy he's gonna feed it to. In Edmonton, perhaps you have option three and four that you have to worry about. You know, there's a guy who's unchecked at the back door. There's just. You know, everybody on the ice becomes a threat because nobody on the ice from your team is where they're supposed to be and doing what they're supposed to do. And eventually, when you're trying to almost do everybody else's job in addition to your own, you struggle and it gets in your head. And goaltending, a lot of goaltending is confidence, and that slowly eroded. And I just think that just playing for he shored up his game to some extent, obviously, you know, because he had looks in Nashville and Montreal that didn't go very well. But I think the key ingredient to this is just, as was the case in Arizona, that you're playing on a good, sound, defensively structured team. It's a lot easier to be their goalie than it is to be the goalie in Edmonton, where it's just a fire drill oftentimes in your own end.
We had your colleague Derek Van Dees join us. He, of course, had the Wild Blues series. You took one for the team and took the rough cities of Chicago and Nashville. thank you for doing that. But what have you seen from this Chicago team? You've now seen their last seven playoff games. What have you seen from them, and how impressed were you last night with their win?
It's just like yesterday was sort of the microcosm of that first round. Like, there's in a lot of ways you could say, you know, they didn't deserve to win that game. Like, Nashville should have won that series, but Chicago just, I don't know, man. They just seem to have a way. They have these guys who just rise up and elevate their game on the big stage and when the team needs it most. I mean, Hossa had a great play. Richards had a great play. Kane was, you know, outstanding with that goal. You know, at some point it's going to be Keith and it's going to be Taze, and like they'll have games where, you know, they don't look that great, and you know they allow a team to, in their own building, erase a 3-goal deficit, and then you know they'll get one, and then they'll close it out in the third period, and they always seem to just do what they need to do to win. They're just a frustrating team to play against because they have so many guys that can burn you, and they also have the ability to, you know, protect a one-goal lead for the final 20 minutes against a team that was pressing really hard.
We're speaking with Rob Tichkowski of the Edmonton Sun. He is covering the Wild and Blackhawks series. This is On the Ice Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Rob, one of the things that was interesting to me in the Wild post game was maybe a few years back there had been a little more panic when they were younger, obviously. But they seemed very comfortable with the game that they played despite some defensive lapses in the first period. Do you think that bodes well for them, or is that going to play us back into that rope-a-dope bang, the Hawks just transition to beat you somewhere?
Well, I like the way that they're keeping things on an even keel, which is good. Like, you don't want to get, because I mean, a lot of guys in the room were trying to, you know, feed them the question of like, hey, you guys came back from 3-0 down. You gotta take a lot of inspiration from that and confidence from that going forward. And they're like, you know, no, we lost this game, and that's all there is to it. The next game's going to be a totally different animal. We're going to have to go back to doing what we do. But, you know, they're not happy with how they, you know, with their, you know, inspirational comeback to go from 3-3. So, I mean, that's a good point. That's a maturity that says, you know, they have to be better. They have to do something different if they're going to get past them in game two, because, you know, they want to split here. So I think they're smart enough and they're experienced enough and they sound mature enough to just get back to what they do and not change too much about the Minnesota Wild, because they're confident enough in who they are that they think they can beat this team if they're playing their best. And talking to them after the game, they said, you know, we weren't really at our best. And frankly, you know, they played well enough. You know, Dubnyk just let in a couple of goals that maybe he shouldn't have, or it might have been a different story. You never know. So I wouldn't change too much if I was them, and it doesn't sound like they are either.
What do you expect to see in game two tomorrow night?
You know what? You lose a lot of money betting against Chicago. I would, as desperate as Minnesota is, and as well as they played in stretches of game two, I think both teams will shut it down. I don't think it's going to be 4-3. I was totally stunned to see six goals in the first 30 minutes. I was expecting 2-1 all the way to the wire. And I think that's what's going to happen tomorrow. I think it'll be 2-1, a coin toss. And it's tough to bet against Chicago in their own building, but I picked Minnesota to win this series. There's something about this team that I like, and I saw flashes of that yesterday. And I think if Dubnyk rebounds the way he has, you know, at other times in these playoffs and in the year, I think they might be able to steal one.
You know, that was Minnesota's first loss of the year when scoring 3 goals or more, which really compounds the fact of that quick start the Hawks got, that really rough fourth goal, which you gotta have. Let's be honest about that, and I'm sure Devin Dubnyk knows that as well. But the one thing that he's done, and he did really well against St. Louis, was respond with a really good effort the next night. He's never had, well, he's really had a bad night since he's been in Minnesota, but he's really had 2 bad nights in a row. And if you want to go to the next level in this league, you have to do that. The other thing you have to do is, you know, have special teams. And I think, you know, Chad and I at the top of the show, I'm surprised that this Wild power play came into this series leading the league at 33%. They were 1-for-3 again yesterday. To me, it's still a power play that's, are you putting lipstick on a pig here? I can't believe they're scoring because they don't have a lot of offensive zone time. Your takes on what you saw on special teams both sides?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like in a short series and in the playoffs, you almost throw those analytics out the window because it doesn't matter as long as you got the goal, and that's what they're doing, right? They just got a, it was a little simple pass behind the net, bing bang, and it's in, and that's all it took. And it's too late to take it back, even if the numbers don't support that it'll stand up over the long haul. They got what they got. I don't know. You argue about sustainability. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, definitely. But there is a lot of talent on that team, and special teams are just weird. It's like goaltending, and it's hard to explain. Sometimes they go on this run, and it's the same guys doing the same thing, and they'll go on a 3-for-8 run, and then a week later it'll be the same guys doing the same thing, and they'll be 0-for-8. So you have no idea which way it's going to go, but. When it's going, you ride it because you don't need it to go for very long because it's just a 7-game series.
Rob, great stuff. Hopefully you can join us next week if you have the time in transition, as this series looks like it could go quite long. It would be awesome if you're available, and we enjoyed your time.
Sure, thank you.
That was Rob Tichkowski from the Edmonton Sun. When we come back, it's going to be... I thought just a really fun interview that I had with Phil Pritchard, the keeper of the Stanley Cup. He, of course, is the guy with the flowing blonde hair, the white gloves, telling great stories about how he got the job, about his travels with Lord Stanley's Cup. That will be coming up next. This is On the Ice Radio on Sports Radio 105. We have a special guest here, Phil Pritchard. He's got a job that I think every hockey fan, every hockey nut would love to have. He is the keeper of the Stanley Cup. Ben Holson reached out to him yesterday, and he is now on the show. And we would love nothing more than to welcome you in, Phil. Thanks for joining us here tonight.
Hey, it's always a pleasure.
So, obviously, you've got this job, which, everybody knows you as the guy with the flowing blonde hair and the gloves, right? And it's just perfect. You've got flow, you've got the gloves, and you've got the cup. Can you just tell our listeners how you came about this job that you have?
Well, first of all, I wish it was blonde hair. It's kind of gray. I've been doing it a while.
Hey, I'm still calling it blonde. It's
okay,
all good.
Fair enough. I've been doing it in 1988, but... You know what, I took a sports administration course at college, and part of the deal was a co-op program. My co-op was with the Canadian Hockey League, which is the junior hockey league, which mm-hmm. a lot of the guys go on to the NHL. And my boss at the time there was on the board at the Hockey Hall of Fame and thought I might be a good fit there. Another guy that was at the CHL at the time had gone on to the Hall of Fame as well, so we had a good fitting there. And it was funny, my first week on the job at the Hall of Fame, the Stanley Cup had to go up to a minor hockey tournament north of Toronto, and nobody really said anything about going, and I kind of said, sure, I'd love to take it up, and so I put my hand up. Next week, I put my hand up again, and that was, like I said, 27 years ago now, and I'm still putting my hand up. However, I would trade it in a second to win that thing.
You know, there's a lot of truth to that. Obviously, you grew up playing hockey, correct?
Yep.
And
I'm trying to play.
Of course. I mean, I think we all can say that. But you're right next to the sheer joy that the NHL player, world-class athletes have at winning the hardest trophy to win in pro sports. What is, when you're on the ice and the crowd's going nuts, even if it's a road crowd because it's just the aura of the Stanley Cup, but what is the feeling like from the players when they win that cup?
Well, you know what? It's amazing. You hit it right on there. The red carpet gets rolled out. Craig Campbell and myself get the privilege to walk it out every year. And regardless whether it's a home team win or a road team win, the fans in the audience are seeing something spectacular. It's the world's greatest sports trophy. We walk it out. Commissioner Bettman hands it to the captain, and we're literally within, I don't know, 5 feet, maybe 6 feet of the guy when he hoists it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the celebration begins, and you see the joy and the admiration, you see the relief, you see every emotion going on these guys, their families, the coaching staff. as they parade it around the ice, and then you get to meet them as a person in the dressing room shortly afterwards as they start their summer with Stanley celebrations. And it's always a great summer, but to see these guys, that it's arguably their greatest moment in their professional life, winning that cup, and to be part of it with them, it's pretty neat. But like I said, and like you said earlier, everyone would rather win it. But this is an okay second, I guess.
I can remember when I was probably about 11 years old, that's all I ever wanted to do is not, you know, forget it. I was convinced I was playing in the NHL, right? but to win it. Then you turn 15 and you look around, you go, I ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
But to win it. And you know, I can think back to all of the old Sports Illustrated articles and the covers of the magazines. And they all had a very distinct, there's one image I remember the most, and that was of Bob Gainey with the separated shoulder when he got the Conn Smythe against the New York Rangers in 1979. It was iconic. He could barely get the thing up because his shoulder was so bad. And there's images like that, I think, that surround every hockey fan with an understanding of what it is, what the passion means. And you know what's cool about it, Phil, is I don't think that people really, I don't care how many people get it. What matters to people like myself and hockey fans is that we get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you think of, first of all, there's 75 countries around the world now that play hockey. Everyone that puts on a pair of skates and picks up a stick wants to play in the greatest league in the world, the National Hockey League, and they want to lift the greatest trophy in sport. All the players get it, their family gets it, their fans get it. And if you're new to the game, as you were saying, you might not get it at first, but once you watch it and you see the passion these guys have, you see the passion the fans have, you see the respect they have. I mean, here we are just finishing the first round. They go through everything, and then the game finishes, and they shake hands with one another. Like, there's nothing else in the world that does that. It's they've taken everything aside. They respect one another, and they move on to the next round, and they keep going until they actually get to that point. And for them, a season's not complete until they lift that cup. And to be part of that, I mean, that's incredible, and I'm sure every player has a different story of it. Our viewpoint as the cup keepers is kind of different, but we see it pretty close and personal.
And we are speaking with Phil Pritchard. He is the keeper of the Stanley Cup, one of the keepers, I should say. He works for the National Hockey League. He is also the man everybody knows with the white gloves and the flowing locks, the salad, as we like to say, bringing his game to the next level. Can you hang for a break? And when we come back, if you can, it would be great to talk about some of the stories that you've had going to all of these countries with all of these players.
Sure. Yeah, no problem, dude.
Awesome. Thank you. Phil Pritchard, back out around the bend. 105, the ticket.
I want to be Phil Pritchard, keeper of the Stanley Cup. Living life without a downside, watching all those faces light up. He's got shiny white gloves and really cool hair. Hard as no saw till Phil gets there.
Radioactive Sports continues.
I wanna be keeper of
that song, written by a close personal friend of mine, and Phil Pritchard is who that is about, and he joins us here. Phil, now you've got songs written about you.
You know what? I just go along for the ride with the Stanley Cup, and it is one heck of a ride.
Well, you know, but that's what makes you so cool, because it's like, you know, you respect what's going on with that thing, and it's all about respecting that in the game. And I mean, there's so many things to this, that just the history of just the original, the top part, the cup itself from Lord Stanley of Preston, like how that whole thing evolved. Do you have to share those stories about how that, if you ever do you do speaking engagements on that? I'm assuming
yeah,
you
yeah,
do.
Yeah, we do. And you're right. I mean, you hit it right on. The tradition of hockey is unbelievable. The National Hockey League is going to be 100 years old in a couple of years. It's as strong as ever. But what's amazing about it is that trophy that they play for. It's Lord Stanley's Cup, the Stanley Cup, whatever you want to call it. It is the greatest trophy there is. And every time we're out in the road on it, you look at the names on it, and you think back to some of these games and these players and some of the great moments in hockey, and it's all right there on the Stanley Cup. And to have it as kind of a travel partner, it's pretty good, because it doesn't really talk back ever. So I can just kind of check out everything that's going on in the Cup, see the see the whole history of hockey kind of unfold right in front of me.
So you've been to Minnesota with it once in a Stanley Cup final when Pittsburgh won in 91.
Yeah.
I was in the stands and just bitter. I would just, but you know, it's one of those things where the grind, it was just so obvious when it was 7-2 or whatever, and it fell apart, and the North Stars at that point were having a legitimate shot at, you know, when they're in Pittsburgh, they're up 2-1 at some juncture in the series. But anyway, needless to say, I there was no way I was leaving that building because I needed to see it come out. I hadn't seen it until then. I think it was at the, remember the L'Hotel Sofitel? I don't know if you recall.
Yeah, it was at the player.
So I showed up there and I looked at it and I, you know, the music was going in the aura. But you know what struck me? And I wonder if you hear this. I thought it would be the size of a refrigerator because it was so iconic in my mind. I was like, wow, that thing's smaller than I thought. Do you ever hear that?
Hey, you know what? We probably won't top three statements it is. It's smaller than it looks. And it's amazing when people say that because they have this big illusion. And I think that's what makes it neat, though. It's the whole illusion of what it is and what it represents. It means so much. And you talked about that Pittsburgh-Minnesota series. I remember back then. The fans got to see us. At that time, we used to push the cup out on a table.
Yes.
And push it to center ice and wait till the TV came back, and then they do the presentation. I think that was with John Ziegler, actually.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So then when Commissioner Bettman kind of came into the NHL, he wanted to make hockey into like a TV production. He wanted the red carpet treatment, the Oscar type of moment type of thing, and we started, I remember on the conference call we had, we started talking about the red carpet and how do we make it better, and we started talking about our white gloves that we wear in the museum, and he loved that idea, and we had told him that all museums wear white gloves. That's what you handle things that you care about, things that have tradition. And he said, let's bring it, let's get matching suits, let's make it work. And it kind of, 94 was the first time we walked it out on the center ice, Madison Square Garden. It was incredible. I remember walking out shaking, and all I could think of is don't step on a TV
wire,
but it was unbelievable, and it's unbelievable every time we do it.
So you've been to Minnesota quite a few times with players, obviously. I'm sure there's been plenty that have won it. Do you have a sense or a feel? I mean, I think this place would go absolutely berserk if the Wild ever won the Stanley Cup. And you know, I don't know if we would have been able to say that about the North Stars in the 70s, but today the passion here grows about as deep as it's almost another province of Canada is what I always say, and I think that's a fair statement. But have you found buildings that have been more electric than others when you've delivered the cup?
Oh, for sure.
What are your top five?
You talk about Minnesota there for a second. I mean, the state of hockey. You look at hockey in Minnesota. High school hockey is huge. College hockey is huge. NHL is huge. There's not very many places that can say that would sell out an arena for a high school championship.
And set a record.
Exactly. So, and when you talk about Minnesota fans, you talk about passion. The North Stars were unique. I mean, unfortunately, the team moved, but they got them back, and the fans were just behind them just as much, and now they've advanced to the second round. They're going to have a hard go at it, but hey, they're down to eight teams now. Anything can happen, as we've seen in the Stanley Cup before. And it's always amazing whether we're in Minnesota for a charity event or for a guy's day with a cup. The fans there are always appreciated. They're always passionate, and they're knowledgeable.
Radioactive Sports continues with Phil Pritchard. He's the keeper of the Stanley Cup of the National Hockey League. Usually out of the Hall of Fame, which is what I understand where it's located. And then you travel throughout the world. Oh, I was going to ask you, can you give me your top three buildings as far as like just losing it when a team won the cup in your career?
I think Madison Square Garden in 94, when it was the first time on the red carpet, that was unbelievable. I think Boston, Chicago a few years ago. If you remember, Boston was up with like a minute left or something.
Yes.
That was incredible. The whole feeling in there was amazing. And I remember when Dallas beat Buffalo in 99
in
Buffalo. The hockey fans in Buffalo there was a ton of Canadian fans there. There was a ton of Sabre fans. There was a ton of hockey fans. but that went into overtime. That was pretty magical as well. But I think every time it happens, and I hate to pick one over the other, it's pretty amazing, and it's another chapter in the story of the Stanley Cup to be. So all of them are great, and all of the fans. I remember when Washington lost four straight to Detroit.
Oh yeah.
The fans, they were unbelievable. The Capitol fans, they couldn't believe, first of all, that they were going to go out in four straight. And I remember talking to fans and say, you could see a Stanley Cup presentation. Like, you've got the best of both worlds. Your team could win and move on, or you're going to see a Stanley Cup. And they got it. And it was cool. And to talk hockey with people, the passionate ones and the traditional ones, it's amazing.
Do you travel the world with this thing now when the players get the cup?
Yeah, you know what? We were doing a count a while ago because we're always updating our stats and everything. I think we've been to 24 countries with the Stanley Cup now.
Wow. You're the one you wanted to run out of the fastest and the one you love to go to again.
All right, let's see. I'd go to Finland every year if I could.
Why?
Great people. Great place. It's 24 hours sunlight in the summer.
Nice.
It's a party all the time. Ones I want to get out of the fastest. Wow. You know what? I'm not sure if there is, because they all have their different cultures. It's hard because the food is different. The languages are tough. I don't know if I want to get out of there faster. I'd like to be in some places more so I can understand the language and food. So I'm going to save that question.
Okay, no, that's fair.
We haven't been to Bora Bora or Fiji yet. We need a player from there.
Okay, so, well, you know what? Give it about 15 years and it'll probably happen. So then the players. I heard a story that Pat Verbeek took it when he won in Dallas, that he took it to church. Is that true?
Yeah. There's been a couple of guys, actually, that's taken it to church. And they've taken it to all different places. I mean, we've been to sauna parties in Finland. We've been mountain climbing. We've been to christenings, like we were just talking about, with church. We've been out for breakfast with it. And people on the outside think, why do they do that? But when you get to know the person and the family and where they're from, it means so much to them, and it all makes sense.
It totally does. And then it's funny, though, when you bring it somewhere with someone and they go to their important watering holes or their school or their church or the rink that they played at as a kid or whatever it would be, what you learn is what I think I've learned from what I've seen is that it doesn't matter if you get it, you suddenly get it as a viewer.
Exactly. You're so right. The guys know they haven't got there without help from family, friends, and all of that. And on their day, they want to thank them. So we'd be driving along, for example, and they'd say, hang on, we just got to stop here. And he'd walk up to the door, knock on the door with a cup in the hand, and say, hi, Mr. Whatever Smith, you remember me? I just want to say thanks. And it's unbelievable at that moment. Or when they're going by a cemetery and they got to stop because they remember somebody.
Mm-hmm.
The emotions that go on that day are unbelievable. I think, though, when they're thrilled to see us show up first thing in the morning, but last thing at night when we're leaving, I think they're just as thrilled to see us go because the focus has been on them all day.
Yeah.
They're a team player. They don't like to focus on them. They want it on their team. And I think a whole day of focus on them, they're ready for a break.
Well, it's almost like a wedding day. You know,
yeah,
it's just
exactly.
Like you're like at these big banquets and things. Wow, the keeper of the Stanley Cup, Phil Pritchard, thanks for joining us here tonight. It was outstanding.
No problem. Let's keep in touch. You in the playoffs.
Hey,
who knows?
For sure.
Might see you soon.
I'm going to come down and say thank you. This place will go bananas, I promise you. And you know what? I know there's a lot of people listening right now that would love for nothing more than to see you bringing it out onto Xcel Energy Center ice for the right team.
Well, hey, how about this? Come June, we're going to present it to the winner and hang out with the winners, whoever that may be.
Perfect. Sounds like a plan, and everybody will love it either way.
Yeah.
Phil,
all right,
thank you so much. Take care.
Great talking to you.
Likewise,
bye-bye.
Thanks.
It is a long way to the top if you want to win a Stanley Cup. No question about that. I'm sure there's a remake of that out there somewhere. The Minnesota Wild trailed the Chicago Blackhawks 1-0 in their series, and they'll play Game 2 tomorrow night, 7:30 Central Time. You can see that on NBC Sports Network. And as I look at it, oh no, Tampa Bay and Montreal play at 6. It means it's the same deal, so stay patient, folks. They start at 5 p.m. This is Eastern. Never look at NHL.com. That's the worst. Right, Chad Graff?
The Eastern times on those Eastern folks, whoever comes from New Hampshire, they're the worst.
How do you deal with that?
Well, it took me forever to get used to it. I grew up in the Eastern time zone, basically. So I moved out here, and I was just so used to seeing, like, oh, the commercial says 7 o'clock. It's on at 7 o'clock. It took me probably an entire year, and I'm not exaggerating, to get to the point where, okay, TV says it's 7 o'clock. NHL says it's 7 o'clock. That means it's 6 o'clock. That took forever for me to get used to.
Here's where the curveball comes into play on your local site. So if you're Central Time on Wild.com, it will say 7:30. But on NHL.com, right, it says 8:30. Now you got to do math. Now you got to start thinking. And if you're not thinking, you think 8:30 and you're on the Wild. You know what I mean? It's just there's too much thinking going on.
I've never been good at math, and that minus one is killing me.
And so that's why you're a writer.
Right, exactly.
Other series to take a quick look at before we get back into the Wild series. And, you know, what a great show we've had today. We've just covered the full gamut. We've heard from the Chicago point of view. We've had the third-party Edmonton Sun. By the way, Rob Tichowski is a terrific writer. I got to tell you a quick story. I used to sit a lot down with the visiting writers when I'm up in the press box, and Rob's been one of my favorite writers that I've dealt with. He's just he's a pro, and he knows the game, and he covers it with such zest. It's great.
That's terrific. He's got a great sense of humor, which I suppose you have to if you cover the Edmonton Oilers.
You think? Just a little? So we heard from him. We heard from Tom Chorsky from FSN with his takes. Of course, he's a great analyst and views the game not only as a player and a Stanley Cup champion, but also as an analyst and a broadcaster as well. So it's great to get his opinions. And as a coach, he knows quite a bit about the game. Of course, Phil Pritchard, keeper of the Stanley Cup, was in the house. We just heard from him. That was a fascinating interview from a guy who has a lot of stories to tell. And trust me, we just scratched the tip of that surface, right? I mean, wow. I mean, we could go for hours with that one. Get me a couple of beers, and I'll be stumbling home because we've been talking so long. The Anaheim Ducks lead the Calgary Flames 1-0, but, man, were they good in that one game they won. The Ducks dispatched the Winnipeg Jets in 4 straight. They're looking like the team that you and I have been pronouncing as the feared team in the West and are showing no signs of letting up.
They were my preseason Stanley Cup pick, and I saw no reason to change that with the way that they played. 5-0 in the playoffs. Not all of the games have been as dominating as their game one win in the second round was. So many of their games in the first round against Winnipeg, a team that a lot of people like to pull that upset just because of the way Winnipeg is built, and of course the Wild know that well. But even when they were down in the third period, Anaheim just, you know, very Chicago-esque in the way that even when things weren't going well, even when they were maybe being outplayed a little bit, they just find a way to win. They're an experienced bunch. They've got good leadership, good defensemen. Really like what Anaheim's doing.
Well, and, you know, it's not like Calgary's going to go away. They've got a lot of great things happening there. And, you know, this next game, I think, will tell us a lot. You know, by the time we get through game two and on to game three, we'll know if this is going to be a whitewashing or if the Flames, who have every bit of a reason to believe they can put up a fight to take on the Anaheim Ducks. The irony of this all is the Wild, the Hawks, Central Division, you know, everybody believes that's probably the deepest division, sending 5 teams to the postseason, the maximum amount of number of teams they could do. However, it looks like to me the best team in the West is still out in the Pacific with the Anaheim Ducks.
They are just very, very good, and I think that's going to be quite the showdown. With, in my opinion, you know, Calgary has been on a great run. They've done a lot of good things. I just don't see them winning that series. So I think it's going to be a great matchup, either the Wild speed against Anaheim or Chicago's speed against Anaheim, and that's why. It should be fun for Minnesota folks to watch this Anaheim team because they know that whoever wins this Wild Blackhawks series will be going on to them. So it's going to be a great series, whoever goes on to there. But Anaheim reminds me of just like a better Blues team. They're physical, they're big, but they don't necessarily have to engage in all the post-whistle stuff. They can beat you within the whistles, doing it their way with skill. They're a very, very good team.
Defensemen are so good. They're so annoying. Freddie Anderson, if he can continue to play at the level he is right now, I just think he's getting better and better as the season's going on, so we'll watch that. The other series, now that's a team that I think if you're Minnesota or Chicago, you really don't want to have to see in the next round, because that's going to be a lot of work to get through that one. Then you go over to the East. You know, I told you off the air, there's three teams over there that bother me if the Wild were fortunate enough to advance to the Stanley Cup, and that's, you know, Washington, who leads New York by a score of 1-0, and then Montreal, who trails Tampa Bay by a score of 1-0. The Lightning, I think that matchup works for the Wild a lot better than those other three teams.
And that series is fascinating to me, that Lightning-Montreal. They've played six times now, including Game 1. The Lightning, 6-0. It's amazing what they've been able to do against a Montreal team that's very good. There's a reason teams, including the Wild, you know, wouldn't want to face Montreal. They've got great goaltending. P.K. Subban is terrific to watch. Their forwards will get in on it on the forecheck. It's a very good team. But Tampa, through all of that, is 6-0 against Montreal. And Tampa plays kind of similar to the Wild. Very good goalie, a couple good top defensemen, and just a really speedy top six, a really talented top six. And they're showing that even with Steven Stamkos, you know, in a little bit, what would be a goal drought for him, maybe not for other players, but for him a drought, they've got others, including Tyler Johnson, who can pick up the pace. And I think that's going to be a really fun series to watch, that Lightning Canadian.
Former teammate of Jared Spurgeon, if you remember, I believe it was Spokane Chiefs they were talking about yesterday. So he's quite the player, big goal last night for them. But I don't think Montreal or Tampa are going to have anything for the winner of the Washington Capitals series. I really don't. For Montreal, they're down 1-0. You know how it gets there. I mean, this is a team, again, you know, they're right there in the end, and everybody, you know, now the pressure starts to mount, and, you know, it's almost a victim of its own popularity in a weird way.
Well, it's almost Toronto-esque or Dallas Cowboys-esque, where, you know, just one loss and the questions start pouring in. And that was a great game, maybe not for the Wild fans who were stuck watching it and couldn't watch the game that they wanted to. But if you were, you know, a bystander, that was a very good game. So I think that series is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, and then you saw that goal that was scored on an offside that was offside. Do you think that'll bring in a coach's challenge discussion now, because it was the playoffs and it was Montreal, and we'll be barking about that one if the series is lost to Tampa? But, I mean, don't you believe that, okay, now we're going to have – we review goals, now we're going to start giving one coach's challenge to reviewing lines. Do you see that happening, and do you think it's a good idea?
Regardless of that, I can tell you that it is going to be discussed this summer by GMs and by coaches.
Well, here we go.
It's going to be discussed. The question is, what do you give coaches the opportunity to review? What do you say, this is what the refs automatically review? That, I think, is where the question comes in. And, you know, if a coach reviews something and gets it wrong, does he not get to review anything? I think eventually we will see coaches challenge in the NHL. I just don't know the format that will be.
A red flag? What are we going to do? We going to throw that on the ice? So what happens?
Play is going on, you throw the flag, and guys are tripping over the flag on the ice.
You know what I like about it is you get the delay a game penalty if you're wrong. So if you challenge,
that's pretty high risk.
Well, you better be ready to. You better have your replay guys looking at it. But then how do you do this? So guys offside, right?
Yeah.
They score. So what do? You say no goal, you bring it back outside, it's an icing call, you can't challenge that because it stopped the play, maybe you could have the face-off in a different spot. I don't know, I think you're nitpicking, these guys are really good at the lines, I hope it's not a lines-based thing. I would love to be a fly on the wall to see what those types of topics would be. I throw the delay game penalty out more facetiously because I think it's a waste of time, that's more what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, it would feel like that, I'm sure, at times, especially. You know, a lot of these instances will come when one team is buzzing a little bit. All of a sudden, it's a way for a coach. It's almost like a second timeout, regardless of whether you get the call right or not. You know, if a team is buzzing, it basically gives you a second timeout.
We're talking with Chad Graff. This is the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. We are winding down our two-hour extravaganza, our playoff coverage, and we're going to listen now to Mike Yeo about not being concerned about the start, because he felt the team was playing pretty well, and we're going to look forward to what he feels his team does best, and that's getting better as the series goes on.
I'm not concerned right now, and obviously it would have been nice to be up here after a win, but I think that there were some good things in here. You know, if you want to ask, we're not rattled right now. It's obviously disappointing to lose a game, and puts pretty big emphasis on the next one for us, and we know that we're going to have to be better than that, but that's what we do. We get better as the series goes on.
Rob Tichkowski from the Edmonton Sun said that the Minnesota Wild are an experienced team in the playoffs. And he's right. Three straight years, and there's a difference in this. There's not a panic, and you know this team has a lot of confidence in what they can do, Chad.
Isn't it crazy that we've gotten to the point where the Wild can lose a game like that, what should be a crushing game
absolutely.
After you come all the way back, and that we can still point to the Wild and say, well, they're experienced and they've been here. And it's absolutely true, but I just think that it shows how far things have come in really the last, 25 months. This was a team 25 months ago who was here in Chicago, and they lost game one in overtime and didn't really recover in game two. But the Wild are to the point now where even with the crushing loss like they had 2 years ago, I think people would be absolutely shocked if the Wild don't come out and play a good game. I'm not saying that the Wild are definitely going to win game two, but I think it would be a shock if they came out and got blown out.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they did win game two. This is an important game, not a must game, but a very important game. The goal is to take one, get one when you're on the road, when you open that way. And, you know, good things will happen and bad things will happen is what I always say. And it's how you manage those things. And I thought Thomas Vanek really addressed things quite well when he was asked what was discussed between periods. And you know what? He really said not much.
Not too much, actually. I think if you look at our first 20, I don't think it was horrible. I think it's a great team over there. You have a couple mistakes, and they bury them, and I think that's what it was. I think they were opportunistic. And, again, they buried three quick ones, but we just sat in here, keep going, and then build shift at a time, because we didn't think we played a horrible first, but obviously free enough, and wasn't great.
It wasn't great, but they have something to build off because that was a pretty good hockey game. What are you expecting to see in Game 2, Chad Graff?
I'm expecting to see, you know, a little bit of the opposite of game one. I'm expecting that the first period will probably be scoreless. I think that you'll see these teams weary of the defensive mistakes that they made, get back to a tight checking game. I think it'll probably open up in the third. You know, both these teams are very good on the counterattack and a counter punch, so maybe it'll open up in the third. But I see much more of a tighter tight-checking defensive game, maybe a 2-1 game.
Look at you buying into Rob Tichkowski's analysis. I would agree with you there. I'm going to say 3-1 empty netter either way, and it's going to be a great hockey game. Can't tell you who's going to win because I'm done predicting that stuff. I am out on that. Hey, hello to Carl from Bloomington. He's listening. I know he's trolling around out there somewhere. He's been a long time. No timer. He never calls, so, but that's okay. Nonetheless, great show, Chad. Enjoy the rest of your weekend in the Windy City. We'll be back on the air probably from here in the studio next week.
Terrific. All right, we'll see you then.
Thanks for your work, my friend. Works tirelessly to put together this production. David Helmer behind the board, Justin on the phones. Thanks much, guys. On Deck Radio next with Gene Larkin, Al Newman, and yours truly. So long, everybody.